From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, rarely does the redrawing of political boundaries capture the public's attention, but these are not normal times. We'll discuss the controversy over redistricting and what it could mean. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is off this week. Our panel includes our two guests, Dan Petrella, he's political writer for the Chicago Tribune, and Kent Redfield, professor emeritus at the University of Illinois Springfield. Thanks to both of you guys for joining us this week.
Good to be here.
Glad to be here.
Dan, I'm going to start with you. The Texas Democrats got a lot of coverage over the last few weeks. They fled their state. Many of them took refuge here in Illinois to prevent a redistricting vote. And that was something that President Trump had pushed for Texas to do, draft a new political map to benefit Republicans in the next congressional election. The Democrats, as I said, left, but they did talk to the reporters before leaving. You were one of those people that helped cover that. What did they have to say about their time spent here and the whole effort to try to delay at least that vote?
Sure. So they really tried hard to frame the fact that they were going to go back when the first special session that Governor Greg Abbott had called ended as a victory, despite the fact that they have now gone back and the maps that the Republicans were trying to pass have now passed the Texas House and are up for a vote in the Texas Senate, potentially as today, Friday, as we're recording this. And their argument is that they really took this issue on redistricting and made it into a national conversation, got everybody all across the country talking about it, and prompted California to act, which the California legislature passed its own congressional remap this week to counteract what was being done in Texas. The issue there, though, is that in Texas, once the Republican-controlled legislature passes it, it just needs to go to Abbott for his signature. In California, because they have a law that has an independent redistricting process, a commission, they have to go to voters with a special election in November and ask for permission to suspend that commission and let the new congressional boundaries drawn by the Democrats who control the legislature in California to take effect for the midterm election next year. And really, that's what this is all about. Trump is afraid that Republicans are going to lose the House in midterm election next year, which is, you know, pretty typical for the party of the incumbent in the White House to get knocked out of power in a midterm election. I think everybody can remember former President Obama describing one midterm election as a shellacking for his party. Trump and his Republican allies have really taken this rare step of trying to change the lines in the middle of a decade. This is usually done just right after the census, when we have the best idea of who lives where and what populations are located in which towns and cities, and it is something that is not done often, and when it's done, it's usually because a court has told a legislature or a commission, whoever draws the maps in a particular state, that they need to go back to the drawing board because they've violated the Voting Rights Act or something along those lines.
So basically, they spent a lot of time here, they delayed a vote, but looks like that vote's going to actually happen. These maps are pretty likely to take effect in Texas. We're not sure how things are going to go in California, but possibly they could be a wash because of what California is doing. So, Kent, was it a victory for these Democrats?
It's too soon to tell. If you do get some action in California and in New York, you know, that's maybe the next most likely place for it to happen. You might get some balancing out, but this is also, you know, you don't know what the candidates look like. You don't know how good their data was, you know, whether they were relying on the last census or they've got some new census data. And, you know, as we've learned, with the job report, you know, there's data and then there's data. And so sometimes these things work, sometimes they don't. You know, when the Democrats drew a map after the 2000 census, they completely missed what they thought was going to happen in the suburbs and created, they could have done a better job of creating Democratic seats, and they completely misjudged what Southern Illinois was going to look like. And so these are all those, you know, kind of iffy sorts of things you don't know until you get the candidates and stuff. It does highlight that we have this huge gulf between states that basically have a political process once you get kind of the trifecta of the legislature and the governor's office, and then a few states that have independent commissions to a greater or lesser extent, or trying to get some representation criteria in there that might speak to, you know, what we really want out of these, other than an advantage for the R's or an advantage for the D's. But right now, it's basically just a gerrymander war.
So, Dan, there has been talk, and Kent mentioned these states that have the political process more than some independent-type process. Illinois falls into that category. Ours are, you know, it's a very political process here in this state. There had been talk that Illinois might join this fray and even try to carve out at least another district somewhere for Democrats, or at least to be more competitive for Democrats. Is that still on the table? Have you heard anything?
You know, Governor Pritzker, who doesn't have the best track record when it comes to redistricting, having campaigned initially on saying he supported that idea of independent redistricting, but then signing some very heavily gerrymandered congressional and legislative maps, has said that that option is on the table. Has not yet, that I have heard, said that option is off the table. As you indicated, I think it's really would be a very difficult proposition for the Democrats to squeeze even one more Democratic seat out of the map that right now is 14-3 in their favor. You know, you might really weaken some of your couple downstate Democratic districts that you have, which, you know, kind of one arcs from the Champaign-Urbana area all the way down through Decatur and Springfield to the Metro East outside St. Louis. And then the other one sort of snakes around in Northern Illinois to take in Rockford and parts of the Quad Cities and other places, Macomb, where Western Illinois University is, down to some of the Democratic parts of Peoria. So, you know, trying to carve out another district for Democrats possibly imperils some of the incumbents who are in more competitive districts, which, you know, our congressional races haven't been super competitive the last couple cycles, but there is that possibility. So I think that would sort of be a last ditch effort if Democrats nationally really felt like they were in a position where they might not be able to retake the House with, you know, if we see Indiana jump in and redraw its lines, or Missouri or Florida or other Republican controlled states. But I would say it's probably pretty unlikely that it will actually happen here in Illinois,
yeah.
Especially given the fact that folks are out now circulating nominating petitions for the elections in the spring, the primaries that are in March, and have to turn those in right around the time that the veto session is scheduled to end. It would cause a lot of chaos, I think, at the state board of elections and at the ballot box in the spring if we tried to redraw the lines now ahead of next year's elections.
Yeah, and I always, you're right about that, and I always like to look at it as like a football analogy now that we're heading into football season. When you're on defense, if you strengthen one part of your defense, you pretty much are going to weaken another, and it seems like that is a concern anytime you do something like this. Even in Texas, there's, you know, a district that might have been pretty solidly red before might have to lose some of those votes and make it more competitive just to try to make this map something where you can elect more Republicans. We'll see what happens there. But one question I've had about this, and I've heard this from some others, I think it's a good question, Kent, is what is wrong with doing this in the middle of the decade? It's, as we said, it's become such a political process, and it's so one-sided in many states like Illinois. Does it really matter when it's done? Does it matter if you do it at the start of the decade, if you do it in the middle, and then you do it again at the end? What's the difference here?
Well, from the perspective of a voter, then you want continuity. You want to understand, or at least understand, even if you're not comfortable with, what your district is. You'd like to build a relationship if you're an interest group, you know, somebody that has some influence, you'd like to build a stable relationship. And so the one thing that makes difficult Politics is difficult in general, but when politics becomes unstable, when you things change frequently, then it's much more difficult to get things done because you just can't be certain. And if you lay down a congressional map, then everybody knows kind of what you have to work with for the next decade. And if you're it doesn't matter. Your best data is after the census, obviously. It's required every 10 years by the US Constitution. And so it's more a question of why you're doing it. And so, shifting from, say, partisan a political process to an independent commission, doing that so that you put something in place for the next time you redistrict, so we've got something on the table in Illinois. We're supposed to have a new initiative for an independent or a different kind of redistricting commission. If you put that in place with good data in, for the 2032 election, that's fine. But if you're constantly changing, and particularly for, not to provide better representation for the citizens, but to give one party or the other a political advantage, representation ought to be more than just R's and D's. And this is not likely to improve the quality of representation in the United States. And maybe if you had, everybody had to get away from, political control and more towards compromise, that might get you in a better place. But so I don't, I don't think this is going to do much for the way the average citizen looks at how they're represented and what they think of the process.
Dan, Kent mentioned this effort is underway. It was an announcement this week. Bill Daley, the former Mayor Daley's brother and former high-ranking member of the Obama administration, also the Republican congressman, and then turned the transportation secretary under President Obama. That is Ray LaHood from Peoria. They were both there, along with many other dignitaries, who have signed on to this idea of a constitutional amendment in the state to change redistricting to make it more independent. Give us the quick overview of what it would do, and do you think it really stands a chance?
Sure, yeah, and this would be the third attempt in about 12 years to amend the state constitution to take the power to draw the maps out of the hands of legislators. The previous two in 2014 and 2016 were struck down by the courts because the Illinois Supreme Court basically said they were going beyond what was allowed for citizen-driven initiatives to change the Constitution. So the authors of this initiative have really tried to craft their plan to fit into this sort of narrow keyhole that the Supreme Court has left for amending the state Constitution, which says that citizen-driven initiatives have to deal with both the structure and the procedure of the General Assembly. So what they plan to do would basically, it's sort of like flipping the current process on its head. Or the way it works now is the legislature tries to draw a map, and when you have majorities in the legislature and the governor's office, they can do it and pass it, and that's where things end. But now, if they can't, if there's a deadlock, it goes to a commission where legislative leaders appoint members, and then if that commission can't come to a compromise solution, the Supreme Court puts one Republican and one Democrat's name in a hat, basically, and draws at random, and whichever party gets the tie-breaking vote gets to draw the map. The idea when this was set up was that that would be so abhorrent to everybody involved that they would try to come up with a map that everybody can live with. But as we have seen in the past, it's gone to that drawing a name out of a hat at least a couple times. So this plan would take the lawmakers out of the actual drawing process. It would have each of the four legislative leaders, so the House Speaker, the House Minority Leader, the Senate President, and Senate Minority Leader, each appoint one legislator from their caucus to this commission, and then two people from outside the legislature, so a 12-member commission. And then that commission would try to draw a map. Similarly, if they could not come to an agreement with a simple majority, those random names would be put into the hat by the Supreme Court, and the tiebreaker goes to whichever party's name is drawn out, and to the winner go the spoils. One important thing to note about this is, because of what the court has said about the citizen initiative process, this does not deal with congressional maps. This is going to only be for state legislative districts. So it's coming at the same time that this big national conversation is happening about congressional districts, but would not deal with those. So the next step is for them to try to collect, they need to collect over 300,000 signatures to get the question on the ballot next year. They're aiming to get over 600,000 to make sure that they survive challenges to folks' signatures. And they're going to need to raise a lot of money to defend against the inevitable legal challenges, and also to pay petition gatherers, and to promote this idea to voters once, if they're able to get it on the ballot.
Now, Kent, you've seen efforts like this come and go as well, and certainly followed the whole process through the years of redistricting. Do you think this has a legitimate shot? And I guess I would ask the question, other than, I guess, a party in power, who would really have a problem with the idea of something more independent and maybe something more fair?
Well, independent and fair is kind of dependent on not only the composition of who's making the decision, but the criteria. It's important to remember that, you know, the way this is written, it says that this is a process that takes place after the federal census. So if this were to be approved, it would not alter the maps that currently exist that give the Democrats, a strong, probably overrepresent the Democrats in the legislature. This would take effect in the election in 2032. The most interesting feature of it is, well, two. One, it prohibits the 12 members of the commission from considering or using political data, voting history, voting registration. So you're not supposed to think about politics when you're drawing the map, which is like, the classic, don't think of an elephant. And so all you do is think of an elephant. Well, we're taking a very political process with 12 people. Four of them are members of the General Assembly. Four of them are not current members of the General Assembly, but they could be former members of the General Assembly. If Mike Madigan were out of jail and still alive in 2032, he would be eligible for appointment, I'm pretty sure, the way I read the language. But it says you can't consider the political implications of whatever you draw. Then it puts a premium on respecting geographic and political boundaries. So, there's a preference for maps that don't make the minimum amount of splits in counties, a preference for maps that don't split municipalities between two Senate districts or two House districts. The political boundaries that currently exist or could also be changed, they're very important. So it's a negative criteria. We want you to not mess around with political and geographical kinds of boundaries. We don't want you to think about politics. But there's nothing affirmative in terms of that criteria about what you should try to maximize. I'm not sure whether they mentioned competition in there or not, but that would not be, that you wouldn't, competition is a political consideration. If you can't know if you're creating competition unless you know what's the political demographic of a district. So It is designed to be a reaction against gerrymanders, and but whether or not it would produce a good map is really hard to say. There would be nothing in the process that would tell you in Champaign County, where you've got Champaign and Urbana, two distinct municipalities, would it be a good thing or a bad thing to put Champaign and Urbana in each in a separate house district, or to combine them in a house district and have the rest of the other house district be a rural district? There's no way to make, there's no way to say, here's the rational reason, if you can't think about politics, having, which solution do you have to that, to that puzzle about, you make Champaign a Senate district, Champaign County, but then if you make the two, where do you place Champaign and Urbana? Because there would be nothing that would say you could put them in one house district, you could split them between, one in one house district, you could put two in one house district, or one in each of the other. So it's really a shot in the dark in terms of what these maps look like. The other quick thing I'd mention is there's no language in here about citizen input, public hearing. I mean, there was rhetoric about, of course, this will be an open process, but there's nothing in there that requires this commission to do anything other than unveil the final map with seven votes.
Let me, before we run out of time, I did want to mention as well the Senate President, Don Harmon, Democrat. He was in the news this week, facing a big fine from the State Board of Elections over campaign contributions. Dan, you covered this story, so fill us in on what this is all about.
Yes, it's pretty complex, but essentially, President Harmon made a contribution in January of 2023 to his Friends of Don Harmon for State Senate Campaign Fund, one of his several different campaign funds, at $101,001, which lifts the so-called self-funding cap, which would allow anybody running for that 39th district Senate seat to raise unlimited funds from contributors. The Board of Elections told him that he thought that should remove the caps through the 2024 general election. The Board of Elections told him no, it only lifts them through the 2024 primary, and he collected contributions after the primaries last year that the board contends exceeded the caps because they should have returned after the primary. He is now actually arguing that, no, wait, the caps shouldn't have gone back on after the 2024 general election. They should actually stay off until the 2026 primary election, when his seat will next be on the ballot. So that was part of the argument that happened before a hearing officer of the board this week. The fine is quite large. It's $10 million, because they say he took $4 million in unallowed contributions. So there's that assessment that would go to the state's general fund, and then there's another penalty that's basically based on 150% of the amount that they say he exceeded the caps by. So he is fighting this. The hearing officer is now considering the arguments that she heard from his attorney, Michael Casper, at the hearing this week, and will make a recommendation then to the board's attorney, who will either forward that along to the board or make her own recommendation. And then the board will decide whether to stick with the finding that it made and the violation and the penalty, or reduce that penalty, or what to do going forward. But, it really raises this question of how this tool that was designed supposedly to protect, people who aren't wealthy themselves from wealthy candidates coming into races and just spending unlimited amounts of their own money to win offices, that's really been turned into a tool for the legislative leaders and others to manipulate and to raise unlimited funds that they can then pass along to members of their caucus and candidates that they support in primaries and things like that.
Yeah, just a couple of minutes here left, Kent, but what Dan had said there, this concern now over this law, I remember that being raised when it passed, that people would, made that point, this puts more power into legislative leaders and other political organizations, and I guess that's what's happened.
No, absolutely. It allows, I mean, the mechanics are, an individual member has contribution limits, but if you waive the contribution limits by self-funding, then you can collect unlimited money. Each of the leaders also controls a caucus committee, which is a political party under the election code. So they can raise unlimited money. And a member committee can give that money to a political party. So Madigan raises unlimited money in his personal committee, gives that money to his caucus committee that he controls as a political party. The political party can make unlimited contributions to legislative members. So it essentially eviscerates the idea of there being any contribution limits as far as the legislative leaders raising money and financing the campaigns of their members. It was not intended that way, but when you add things to bills in the middle of the night, you sometimes are surprised. It's the people that aren't surprised that usually end up benefiting from those situations.
Let's go now to our notes from the field. Dan, we'll start with you this week.
Yeah, I was just going to mention an interesting bill that Governor Pritzker signed on Thursday, which he says is intended to protect journalists from strategic lawsuits that are used sometimes to intimidate or prevent them from covering things. This stems out of a case in which the Chicago Sun-Times wrote about a reduction in $1 million assessment of Trump's hotel in Chicago from the Property Tax Appeals Board. The former executive director of that agency sued the Sun-Times for defamation. And the Supreme Court ruled that the current law, which is called the SLAPP law, which is short for strategic lawsuit or strategic lawsuit against public participation, didn't apply because the Sun-Times was not working in furtherance of government participation. The new law signed by the governor specifies that the press, when, quote, opining, reporting, or investigating matters of public concern, is participating and communicating with the government. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and whether that strengthens press protections in the state.
All right. And Kent.
Just some fun facts about the Republicans being in the wilderness politically in Illinois. Next year, election year 2026, it will have been 12 years since they elected a governor or a state comptroller. It's been 16 years since they elected a U.S. senator, had a majority in the congressional delegation, or elected a state treasurer. It's been 30 years since they had control of both the House and the Senate in the legislature. It's been 32 years since they elected an attorney general or secretary of state, and it has been 56 years since they had a majority on the state Supreme Court.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Dan Petrella and Kent Redfield. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.